Hello,
Brandon, you're back.
hello. I'm back.
You've returned to the show. We missed you so much. If folks tuned in last week or listened to the podcast, my computer froze at one point. We just felt lost without you. So I'm just so glad that you're back.
Oh, thanks. Yeah, it was weird. It was the first show I had missed since we debuted May last year. So
Wow.
it was almost a year of show every week. And thanks for covering for me. I
Those
feel
big shoes
great.
to fill, but we got through it.
I didn't open my laptop for like 5 days. It was incredible.
You know what this says to me? This says to me you need to take more vacations, Brandon. I
That's kind
think.
of why I did it. My manager yelled at me and she's like, "You need to take a vacation." I was like, "Well, if you insist." And she
Our
was right.
goal for 2021 is to have PJ step in for you more. Oh my goodness. Well, how's your week been so far coming back? It's been
Good.
3 days now since your vacay.
Yeah, easing back into things, but there was a really cool announcement that Microsoft shared this week about the future of Visual Studio,
Ooh.
and I don't know if you heard about it, but we announced, I hope I get the year right, Visual Studio 2022. It is not available to download yet,
Okay.
but some of the big news is it'll be 64-bit now. So
Wow.
apparently Visual Studio has been 32 bits forever, and we're bringing that into the modern day world, which, to be fair, there's a lot of dependencies on in Visual Studio, so it's not easy, but you'll finally be able to open. Oh, I heard the numbers because, well, let me back up. One of the big reasons we're doing it is because 64-bit apps can utilize more RAM. So if you had a giant supercomputer with a terabyte of RAM, you were still limited in your 32-bit ecosystem as to how many files and projects you could have open in Visual Studio. And so, yeah, now you'll be able to go crazy. So I forget what the number is. It's something like hundreds of thousands of files can now be open to Visual Studio. So if somebody out there has a giant project like that, good for you. I don't ever want to deal with a project like that, but you can do it. And the other big part of that was Visual Studio for Mac is getting a total redo, facelift, makeover. It's going
We're
totally
doing
native.
makeovers? So exciting. I love a makeover montage from an 80s, 90s movie. Okay.
Yeah. So always good as selfishly as a C# developer, .NET developer, to see Microsoft just continuing in investing more and more into the Visual Studio suite. So I'm excited. That was a nice little announcement back because I had known about it, but I couldn't talk about it. So now we talk
Yeah.
about it.
Does this mean we're going to get 4K VS Code pets? That's all I'm interested in. Like, what capabilities will VS Code pets have now that we're ushering in a new era of VS Code?
I hope so. Those look great. Have you tried those in VS Code?
I have, and I'm so obsessed. And anytime they add a new character, I mean, Clippy has a hat now and a skateboard. It's just very exciting times. Definitely check
Wow.
out the VS Code Pets extension if you
The
have not already,
future
y'all.
is here, y'all.
It's like I always had a Tamagotchi as a kid. I wanted like a Tamagotchi but bigger, and now it's just living on my computer. It's a beautiful thing. We love to see it.
Do you have to feed it and like clean up after
I think it's just kind of to keep you company, like in the same way. And
it?
I don't think they're giving you help like Clippy, although maybe that's a feature. Maybe I should contribute to the open source project, add some useful tips and tricks. I actually thought about recently, building a Clippy for my dad because I've been helping my dad learn how to use a new device. He had a very old Mac, and now he's trying to learn how to use a Chromebook. And I'm writing out docs for him, which has been very fun to teach him how to do different things on his computer, like the copy and paste command are a little bit different. And now he's got right clicking. It was a very old
Whoa.
Mac. So I was thinking, oh, maybe I should just build a Clippy for my dad. And then I realized, am I the Clippy? It was a very meta moment for me.
You've been the Clippy all along.
Let me just zip off my costume. Zip. No, I'm just kidding. I have a really fun Microsoft trivia thing to share today before our guest comes
Ooh.
on, Brandon.
Yes.
I've been doing a little guest segment every other week on this great show called The Positivity Report with my pals Josh and Mark and the whole gang. And I've been kind of sharing some Microsoft history with them. So first I went on and I talked about Kairu the Dolphin, who I've talked about on here before, the alternate assistant in Japan that was sort of a Clippy substitute. I talked about the Windows 95 software video starring Rachel and Chandler to teach folks with the power of the cast of Friends how to use Microsoft. But I recently learned through a tweet about, and tell me if you've heard about this before, Brandon, do you know much about the Windows 95 Start Me Up commercial and kind of the history and lore around that?
I don't think so.
Okay, so this was a very fun quarantine rabbit hole I went down a couple weeks ago. So there was a Windows 95 commercial that came out, and it had the song Start Me Up by the Rolling Stones in it. And if you know the song is like, Start Me Up, you know, people are familiar with it. And someone in the comments mentioned that a fun fact about music licensing is that when that commercial came up, the person in the editing room working at Microsoft was a pretty big audiophile or like fan of the Rolling Stones and could tell that the recording that, you know, they had paid several millions of dollars or however much for wasn't the original recording. Like, he was able to pick that up because he was just a kind of a savant with Rolling Stones music. And it turned out that the Stones had given them a newer recording that they recorded in the studio to make sure that the certain bandmates who weren't in the band anymore wouldn't be getting the royalties for it, which opened up this whole kind of like case of debunking or kind of putting into play, making sure that when you buy the rights to a song, it is the actual thing. And I'm sharing my screen right now, but Brad Chase has a really, really great article about this that I ended up reading, all about the Windows 95 Start Me Up story. And it goes into all the details of this if you want to check it out. But I thought this was so fascinating. This is just a rabbit hole I literally went down because of someone's comment mentioning this. And I was like, this can't be real. And it's totally true. They made a deal with Microsoft to secure, you know, the rights to the song. And it ended up being a kind of a different version with a different drummer, I think, perhaps. So definitely check that out if you're interested in learning a very niche, interesting piece of history about the Windows 95 Start Me Up commercial, because famously Windows has a start button, and it seemed like the perfect accompaniment to that commercial. And I just loved this. I love finding out like weird, quirky things about the behind the scenes and like how the sausage gets made in these things.
And what just like a fantastic rabbit hole, especially during pandemic lockdown. You got nothing else to do. Learn all about this amazing story.
Well, it's just like when we learned about the cue jockey on the show when we had Carmen on.
Was Carmen, that? Yeah.
And about how they used to, if you haven't listened to that episode, y'all definitely go back and listen to it. We learn all about the Microsoft cue jockey, aka it was someone's job to just DJ the music for the hold cue for people who called in. So cool. I wish that was my job.
That's right. I'll drop a link to that episode here in the chat, but you can always go to 8bits.tv and check out the back catalog. And yeah, it was back when we had Carmen Crincoli on for our holiday episode back in the day.
Oh my gosh, that's right.
I hear we have another amazing guest today.
We do. I'm so excited, Brandon, because this human is someone that I have interacted with so much on the interwebs, on Twitter. They're always very funny. They have a shared love of 90s nostalgia that I do as well. Always tweeting the funny technical tweets out there. So everyone, welcome to the show, Jocelyn Harper.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me on.
Thank you for coming, Jocelyn. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you.
So
I'm shy now.
For people who don't know you or don't follow your amazing Twitter, it's Java V VITCH.
Yeah. So I wanted just history on that. I wanted Java Witch because I do like witchy things, but okay. that wasn't available. So I was like, So I learned that when I saw The Witch in like 2016, when that came out, that back in the day, they didn't actually have the letter W. So they just used two V's. So I just used two V's for it. So
I love it.
Technically, it's Java Witch, but.
It's so funny because in my brain, you were always Java Witch. And only just now when I was reading it, I was like, oh, no, is there a typo? But no, you just tricked my brain.
I tricked your brain. Exactly. Branding. So I guess.
What is your kind of how would you describe it? We're going to go all over your origin story and how you got here. But tell the folks at home a little about yourself.
Oh, gosh. Hi. I've been a software engineer for 5 years, literally 5 years a few days ago. I'm currently a senior software engineer at PayPal. Woo woo. And things that I really like besides just tech in general, I like annoying white tech bros. I love video games. I love cooking. I love my cat Luna. I love musicals. I love Broadway. I know. I love like a lot of things that don't have to do with tech, but essentially I'm just out here trying to normalize tech because I feel like for a very, very long time, tech has just been like this monolith that people see and they're just like, oh my gosh, they're in tech. They work at like PayPal and Microsoft. And it's just like, no, we're just normal people that Google and things. And hopefully by normalizing it, people will realize that it's something they can obtain to be and, you know, get into tech. So that's my goal.
Also, Brandon took an amazing, amazing screenshot of Jocelyn's cat, Luna, for the show. So if you're listening to the podcast, make sure that you check out the website to see this adorable photo featuring Luna.
Mm-hmm. Luna was not
Luna looks
it.
Amazing.
So you have also, so in addition to also being Broadway fangirls over here. Sorry, Brandon. Mm-hmm. There's going to be a whole segment of the show dedicated to Broadway, but we've just decided. what is your path to tech? What is your sort of origin story of getting to work in a senior engineering role at PayPal?
Yeah. So oddly enough, it started when I was really, really, really young. I taught myself how to code with HTML and CSS when I was like 9. Because my parents got me a computer for graduating the 4th grade with straight A's. Yes, that's as bougie as it sounds. And I was super excited about it, convinced my parents to get me AOL because I got a CD in the mail and I was like, ooh, I want to do this. So they paid for it. Silly parents. And so that kind of got me into a lot of things I probably shouldn't have been looking at when I was 9, but also people making these Angel Fire.
Yeah.
Geocities. There we go. I actually used Express for a lot of my websites. But that is no longer a thing now because it just leads to the clothing brand. But I saw people with all of these really cool things like pixel dolls and pixel animations. And I was just like, I want to learn how to do these things. And so I literally went to a website called Lissa Explains, which was very, I think it was kind of based off of Clarissa Explains It All, which was kind of genius.
Love it. The original engineer on television.
that part. And I taught myself how to make a website and taught myself like Photoshop, even though at the time it wasn't Photoshop. It was like Corel Paint Shop Pro. That's it. That's what I used. Taught myself how to make like animations and all of this stuff and kind of forgot about it while I was in school, which was odd because I was like in math league since I was like 6 and Science Olympiad and all of these really nerdy, great things. And then I was an office manager at the age of 25, fast forwarding, and my friend went to a boot camp because she was starting to do some SQL database things, even though at the time I wasn't really understanding why she was doing database
things. Does anybody really know why they do database things?
I was just like, still a valid question.
I was just like, why are you suddenly a DBA now? Anyway, and so she convinced me to apply to it. I applied, got in. It was a 12-week Java/JavaScript boot camp where we learned Java and JavaScript at the same time. And after that, I got my first job at JP Morgan Chase as a Java developer in 2016, and it's kind of just took off from there. And now I'm a senior software engineer trying to figure out, you know, what the heck I'm doing. But it seems as though I'm doing something right. Very non-traditional, but I don't think I would have preferred it to be any other way, really.
I love how Angel Fire and GeoCities have become a frequent topic on this show. And Brandon, I don't know if you saw this, but I tweeted the other day, for folks listening, I will describe this in great detail. I was doing some research, and I found this Mary-Kate and Ashley Olson homepage that legitimately says at the bottom of it, best viewed in 800x600 resolution.
Copyright 96.
It's such a time capsule. Like, I am upset that I don't have access to the O-Town fan pages that I made on Angel Fire back in the day. But this is just a sensible Angel Fire site that has just, it's like a fossil. I wish that we had more of
these. I'm actually deceased right now. I love the viewer counter at the bottom.
Yes.
Bottom
left. Bring back the viewer counter. I should. Let's see. I gotta make a whole account. But I was doing some research for an episode of a podcast that I'm doing about Mary-Kate Ashley Olson, and this took me down a rabbit hole of just the amazing, I call it art. These Angel Fire pages are art.
It is art. They should be like saved, put into a digital museum. Oh, is this where we bring in the NFTs? Can we do an NFT for that website?
Whoa.
I'm sorry. Probably. I had to.
Brandon, did you ever make one of these? What was your calling to Angel Fire or GeoCities?
No. So I agree with you though. We've had so many guests that kind of got their first coding start on Angel Cities, Angel Fire, GeoCities, you know. I will say it's funny how so many people contributed to these pages, like made websites, and even just on places like MySpace or Neopets has been another big one. Yeah. And the number of folks that didn't realize it at the time that they were coding, like, that's what we do day to day. And you're doing it when you're 8 years old. And it, again, just shows how anybody can get into tech. And it's, I don't know how else to like shout it from the rooftops, but it's like, if you did an Angel Fire, GeoCities, Neopets, MySpace website back in the day, you could get into tech. You could do it. So that's an amazing, amazing story.
I feel like a hacker when I would like copy HTML from my live journal and like try to edit the different color hexes. Like, I was just guessing, throwing out random numbers, and I wish I could just hold little Chloe and be like, learn this.
I mean, no. Aren't we all still just guessing and throwing out random code, see if it works?
Yeah. Really? We really are. I mean, I must admit, I still use a color picker when I'm doing things. Like, and I love that you brought up LiveJournal, because that was a whole other sector, was trying to like do your own custom LiveJournal layout. Oh, yes. Too.
So important to your clout and status as a middle schooler back in my day.
It needs to be pretty, and I carry that throughout my life. It needs to be pretty and functional. Yeah.
Anybody out there thinking, you know, maybe not in tech or looking into tech, if you found yourself having an obsessive focus on how beautiful your live journal looked, perhaps think about getting into Frenic.
Yes, do that.
Absolutely.
Join us.
And speaking of which, we were chatting about this before the show, Jocelyn, but one of the things I'm most impressed with is not only did you have this amazing journey to get where you are today as a senior engineer, but now you're also helping people get there as well. And yes. One of the things what should we start with? Maybe getcuteguide.dev?
Da-da-da-da.
Tell us all about it.
Oh, yeah. So I'm writing a book, y'all. Technically, I wrote the book. And it's called A Software Engineer's Guide to Seniority. A lot of the times I feel like I should have shortened that title, but it is what it is. Basically, I decided to write a book because, you know, I recently became a senior software engineer at PayPal, and I just realized that I had no idea what I was doing. And I started talking to a lot of friends that were senior engineers or like mid-level, and they also had no idea what they were doing. And I'm just like, why does nobody know how to act as a senior software engineer? Any of the resources that I would look up were telling you how to, you know, pass a senior interview. So, you know, basically like your system designs and your algorithms and caching and all of that. So I'm like, that's fine. There's a lot of resources on that. People don't need to hear that from me again. But I want people to know how to prep themselves for applying to a senior software engineer interview. I feel like that was one of the main things where I see a lot. And I always reference the subreddit CS Career Question. That's kind of like an amazing, like, little treasure trove of a dumpster fire. And I see all of these people talking about, like, I've applied to like 500 positions and I haven't gotten anything back. And I'm just like, chances are your resume sucks. And so, which is, it's true. I'm sorry. So
as a former recruiter, I concur.
Not that your experience sucks, but just you don't know how to write a resume. So I go into that in depth. And then, like, you know, once you actually get the job, you pass the technical part, like, okay, now what? And it's just trying to set up people the best way possible for success and trying to help them figure out what path they want to take once they become a senior software engineer. And it's different per company, right? It's different from FAANG companies to like your smaller companies as well. But I try to generalize the advice, just really good advice overall for like soft skills. So I'm really focusing on soft skills as far as that's concerned, because not a lot of software engineers have great soft skills. I'm kind
despite
of
having
people.
The word soft in the title. It's like soft skills, software.
They don't. And I'm not like bashing anybody. It's just because they don't know. They haven't had the experience, right? And as somebody that's had the experience 5 years as a software engineer now, and then also, gosh, how many ever years I've had in like retail before that, like, if you hadn't had the job experience before, you don't know now. So I just wrote a book and I thought maybe this will help people. And hopefully it does.
And I think it's important to educate folks, especially who are new to the industry. I know for me, I'm very lucky and I have a partner who's a lot more senior and works in this industry. But if I didn't have him, I wouldn't know about these nuanced things like leveling, like how leveling and number leveling is so different across different companies. I wouldn't know how to negotiate for my salary. And there's these things that are just sort of inherent knowledge in the industry or even vocabulary words that, you know, I love that you are taking your experience and helping teach more people, because we all need help, especially as folks who come into this industry, a very unique backdoor path. How do you know what to do unless you know what to do?
Yeah, exactly. I wrote it from the sense, like the position of what would I have wanted to know when I first got into the position? And apparently 140 pages worth.
Yeah.
And it's so good because, you know, as you grow in your career, you tend to establish mentorships and you help kind of the junior engineers. And this is a big part of that mentorship. But when I was just thinking about it, the folks I've mentored, it's always one-to-one. And I'm able to help them, but I'm only able to help that one person in that one moment. And now you have a whole book on it and we can help the world. So on behalf of the world, thank you.
Oh, thanks.
And I also want to show this off. So this is the website. So when folks go to cute guide, getcuteguide.dev, and that's G-I-T, cuteguide.dev. You'll see this really cool page. And if we scroll down a little bit, I just wanted to show off a quote here because I love this. It's very inspirational. But yeah, everyone tells you how to interview, but they never tell you how to grow. And couldn't have said it better myself because, yeah, there's boot camps will focus on interviews. There's books everywhere, like you said, on interviews. But then once you're in the job, then what? And I feel like we all just kind of figure it out as we go.
Yeah. And I think that, honestly, I think that could contribute a lot to burnout that people experience too. I feel like if you think that you just have to be a technical performer and you have to do really well technically and you just keep doing that, that's a really easy way to get burnt out. But the thing is that there's so much more. There's like leadership qualities that you can have. And I just really want to help people in that sense because it's like you don't have to code all the time in order to be of value to your team or to your company. Honestly, a lot of companies want you to do more outside of coding in order to get promoted and to do more. So hopefully this helps people just to step away from the keyboard, set like strict working hours. Please don't be working till like midnight on things. Unless it's like, I don't know, something that's like due the very next day or something, or it's like a hot fix or a P1 or something like that. But I just think people just have like a very warped sense of like work ethic when it comes to tech. And I'm hoping like when people actually figure out the actual like how things actually work outside of like levels.fyi, which I use a lot, by the way, which shows the disparity across a bunch of companies with leveling, because senior engineer differs for that. But I'm hoping that can help people.
And I don't know about you, Jocelyn, but when I went to my boot camp so long ago, and Jocelyn and I graduated around the same time in 2016, like it was only my only thought process was, I just need to get a job. I just need to get a job. I need to get that first job. And I love that this is a book that talks about seniority and how to like progress your career from there. Because I don't know about you, but I never have been a senior before. I've only been a senior in high school. Like I've never been a senior in any other way in my life. And I never really had a career or like a career trajectory. I worked in retail. I was a nanny. So even just thinking through these things and understanding them and knowing how to think about them, I think is such an important skill that often no one really has a roadmap on. So having this guide and this roadmap is so great, especially for folks who maybe are afraid to ask for mentorship or don't have those resources available to them.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like, sorry, I cut you off again, Brandon.
Oh, it's just sure. We have so many folks chiming in on the topic and let's see. I'm going to pronounce that as dedicated, saying that he's never even heard of leveling and how you focus on steering teams and actually, former guest, Jens, welcome back. Good to see you again. He said, building rockets is a great way not to burn out. And
burn out the booster, though, right?
And then, Osria saying, you need soft skills to become a senior engineer. So how can you get there? And it sounds like you've found the perfect niche for work.
Great.
What do we need in this industry?
I mean, I can totally answer that question now, but also buy my book. It's funny you asked that like people without empathy, how do they become senior software engineers? You know, these people get pushed through the ranks because depending on the company, there may be no other way for them to level up. They may get more money. And so they take these positions that maybe they're not totally about. And then they end up becoming, I'm not going to mince words, really terrible tech leads and then really terrible managers. And I can't necessarily blame them when that's the environment that they have been given and they've been shown that's the only way to be successful and the only way to get more money, because we're all doing this for money. Let's be real. So I can't blame them too much, because if a person's like that, there's only so much that manager training can fix. You know what I mean? So hopefully people can build empathy. And if you have access to a therapist, get started on it now.
Yeah, personal and mental health and growth, I think, is equally important. Like, if you're going to manage a team, you got to get your own brain in order as well.
Mm-hmm. Well said. Absolutely. Now, Jocelyn, not only do you have a book, but you also have a podcast. So we'll bring up the link now. It's getcutepodcast.com. So again, GITcutepodcast.com. Nice. Is this also heavily focused on similar soft skills, leveling up?
Yeah. It's a bit more technical, though, because I started the podcast when I was working at my previous company, and I was experiencing some really heavy imposter syndrome because I was just like in a really toxic environment. And speaking of people that shouldn't be managers, so in a way to try to save myself mentally at the time, I started the podcast because I was just like, well, I'll just start talking about technical things that I know about, and maybe I can help people with these things and these ideas. And, 2 years later, it's definitely become a lot bigger than I thought that it would have been. But yeah, basically I try to help people as much as I can with technical things. I do talk about like technical interviews and algorithms and just like, Java. I have a Java series that's going on right now. So I do try to help people that way, but I do also talk about how to fix your resume or how to handle talking to recruiters or those things that if you have never done it before, you really don't know about. So essentially everything that is associated with Get Cute is just essentially, I want to help people be the best versions of a software engineer that they can be. And also show people that it's difficult to break into the tech, but it's not impossible. And you don't necessarily need to have a 4-year college degree to do that.
So. Speaking of which, we've got PJ in the chat here, newly job getting a non-traditional background, self-taught person. Shout out to PJ. Woo-woo.
Gonna have you back on the guest, show. Former host of the show.
And PJ says, we call that stuff the hidden curriculum in education. And I think that's so true. I feel very lucky that I have a lot of friends and a partner who works in this industry, because there's so much nuanced information that you really don't know exists until A, someone tells you, or B, mm-hmm. you make a mistake and someone tells you. No. So I think it's so great to pass on this knowledge. I feel exactly the same way. Like, as a boot camp grad, also, I think it's so important to educate folks, A, not only, hey, you can do this if you don't work in tech, this is an industry and a skill you can go into. But once you're in it, oh my gosh, now what do I do? And that's important to know, okay, I did the really hard thing. I got the job. I went through the gauntlet of the whiteboarding interview. Now what?
Yeah. I even go into like what to do when you're waiting for an offer. Yeah. There's just so many things that people don't know what to do. People start panicking or they just sit there. And I even went into like, maybe this is just me personally, but before I was a software engineer, I was poor. So when I got my first like offer letter with that salary, I didn't know what the heck to do with that. I was just like, what?
Money.
money? This is a lot of money. But then it's kind of like, okay, now you need to start managing your money. I'm not a financial advisor. I don't go into like the nitty gritty with that. I just say, get a financial advisor.
But like, what is equity? What is 401k? How should I think about this stuff? It's a whole new world for a lot of folks.
What the heck are RSUs? What does vesting mean? Like, it's all of those things that like, I didn't know about any of that until I was forced to figure it out. So, it's really important. And, you know, trying to have people understand what's TC, what's total compensation. I don't understand what that means. Like, really breaking it down for people so they understand, like you said earlier, Chloe, like understanding what everything is. So when you go to negotiate, you have a better understanding of where you're sitting. So.
And imposter syndrome definitely doesn't help with that. Like, I found asking for help is so, so important, because how do you know what you don't know? Like, people like you, Jocelyn, doing the Lord's work out here for
thank you,
newbies.
All the knowledge, sharing all the secrets. Love it.
Now, that's what I do.
Shifting gears just a little bit, you mentioned Java. And before the show, we were chatting about this new Microsoft announcement and Java. Tell us more about that.
Okay, so I was really excited. I don't know if anybody has been following the Google versus Oracle Supreme Court case that I believe the verdict came in last week. Essentially, Oracle was suing Google because Google had used code, like copied verbatim from the Java API in a Android SDK, I believe. And essentially, Oracle's argument was like, this is copyrighted. You can't use this. And essentially, Google was like, no. It's like, it's free. It's open to the public. No, that's not a thing. So pretty much everybody was just like, okay, this is going to like really impact coding as we know it, our industry as we know it. So we're hoping that the Supreme Court gets it, because, you know, sometimes with people that aren't very invested in tech, it can be a little dodgy which way it's going to swing. So the Supreme Court did, rule in favor of Google. So yay. So literally that same day, Microsoft announced that they, are doing Microsoft Open JDK. And, for those of you who are not Java engineers, Open JDK came about once Oracle, did the thing and got a hold of, Java because, I'm not going to say this nicely. Oracle kind of just likes to destroy things that they get a hold of. And so as a Java engineer, a lot of us were very scared that Java was just going to become obsolete because Oracle likes money. So Microsoft is doing a really good thing. I've been following Microsoft as far as like their open source contributions for a couple years now, maybe 3 years. Essentially, kind of like when it started around GitHub, I was just like, what is Microsoft doing here? I kind of like this. Like, why do they like open source so much? And so it's really nice to see Microsoft actually standing behind the open source contribution and helping out, fellow Java engineers. So I'm super, super excited, to have like another really giant tech house kind of backing Java that's not Oracle. So.
Yeah, and shout out to previous guest Brian Benz, who was originally brought into Microsoft to talk a little bit about this new thing called open source. So we bow to you, Brian.
Java. Thank you,
Brian. And Java.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be surprised if Brian had paved the trail for that. Jocelyn, I don't know if you know this or not. JR in the comments is asking, were hardware devices included in that ruling, or is this just software APIs?
I want to say it was just software.
It's a good question.
I read the ruling, but I don't remember seeing hardware. Yeah, I know. I read the entire
ruling. None of us are lawyers, JR.
I want to say it's just software, though. I haven't seen anything about hardware as that ruling is concerned.
Well, I love Java. I love Java as the coffee. I love Java as the language. And it's great to see, because open source, all the things, please. Like, we truly stand on the shoulders of giants. I love, love, love open source. And it warms my heart that Microsoft is playing a big part in open source these days, because who would have thought? Like,
it's so nice to hear that people love Java too, because people love to rag on Java.
Okay, do you know why I love Java? Actually, Jocelyn, you will love this. You too, Brandon. But specifically, Jocelyn. When I was first starting out in tech, I was trying to decide like what language to start using. And my boyfriend showed me this series of videos from the Java Zone conference that I believe Oracle used to put on, or maybe it's just the Java-specific one. And there are videos featuring such music videos like Lady Java singing Java Zone, Java Zone. high budget music videos, high budget previews of movies. They used to do like a very elaborate, very theatrical video every year for this conference. So shout out to whoever organized those videos, and go check out the Java Zone Lady Java video, because it is one of my favorite tech internet things out there.
Oh my God, that makes me so happy.
We need to have somebody from that on the show.
Someone from the music video. There's probably 100 people in this music video. We need anybody out there. If you are in this music video, tell us and we'll have you on the show. We need to know everything.
Yes, please. Why do I feel like Oracle's not cool enough to do that? That was probably like a Sun Microsystems thing. Like, well, Sun still had job.
Deep dive into it. Figure out how we need this to happened. Know. Okay, but wait, speaking of Lady Java and Java Zone, sorry, Brandon, Broadway was mentioned. We got to go back. Tell me about give us your favorite musical, and how did you get interested in Broadway shows?
So, oh, my favorite musical. Okay.
You can pick two or three if you want. I know it's so hard to pick one.
Okay, the last 5 years. I'm sorry. Yeah, the last 5 years. It's just the last 5 years is just so beautifully composed, and it just makes me very, very happy. Miss Saigon.
Okay.
I know it's problematic. Sorry. It's beautiful. Sorry. And thinking I'm probably going to have to say, fuck.
It'll come as a surprise to no one that mine is Legally Blonde.
Oh, I saw a local performance of Legally Blonde here, and it was just amazing. It was so good.
Ratatouille
I would either
musical.
Have to say, I know this is probably, it's either Rent or Wicked, because those two musicals were very big for me getting into musicals. So how did I get into musicals? So I've always been singing. I've been singing for like, I think there's videos of me singing at like age 3. So at some point, like singing like Mariah and Whitney and those things were good. I honestly can't even I think it may have been in like middle school. And I saw, yes, it was a choir performance, and we went to go see Sweeney Todd.
Wow. That is a big, heavy intro musical. Yeah.
And I freaking loved it. So so from there, it kind of was just like, it just went off. Because at that time, I remember when Wicked came out on Broadway, and I was in Delaware, and there was no way I was going to be able to go to New York City to be able to see it. But if you were on LimeWire, you could download the entire performance bootleg. And guess who did? And then watched it obsessively. And so from that, I just started like going to like figuring out all of these musicals and talking to like my theater friends and figuring out like what musicals they were into. And I went to every high school theater production possible. I was way too shy to ever be in it, though. I just really love Broadway. I love musicals. I think that some of the best voices in the world are on Broadway and have been on Broadway. And I just appreciate acting, and I appreciate singing the most. With people that can sing just make me so happy, because I don't think people understand how hard it is to be like to sing, to have like that natural talent to sing, and then to also be like freaking phenomenal.
Now that you mention it, I'm pretty sure some of my earliest internet memories and the first online community I was a part of was the BroadwayWorld.com message board. And I would use a currency. I had a lot of sheet music, like for auditions and, you know, different things that I would sing or play on the piano. And there was a currency within the online Broadway theater community to trade, like, this is back in the Napster days, of course, like to trade bootleg Broadway videos for sheet music. So just imagine a young Chloe almost like trading stocks. Like, I'll give you my sheet music for Defying Gravity if you give me that video of Avenue Q.
I forgot Avenue Q was also one that I downloaded illegally. Avenue Q was amazing.
Don't put us in jail, please. We're children. The statute
was like, wait. That was like 20 years ago, please.
But I learned a lot about like how to communicate with people online. It was my first time being on an internet forum. And, you know, I think everybody has different ways, especially if you have a non-traditional background, to like translate your experience then into now. And I think building theater communities is a lot like building a developer community, because in the same way that you put on a show, like a show requires so many people, like a stage manager and actors and sets and lighting. And I feel that way even at Microsoft, and we're working on a really large project, like so many people, just like they say, there's no small actors, just, you know, there's no small parts, just small actors. And I think the same goes for any kind of project that you're working on. It takes a whole team to put up a show. The show must go on, you know?
It's true. And I think that, especially in tech, I think that there's always like everything that you do, no matter if it's like feature work or you're doing a whole new project or whatever it is, it's like it's a collaboration with everyone, right? So I feel like sometimes we as engineers kind of like to silo ourselves and think it's like, oh, well, we're software engineers. No, you got, I'm like, no, there's product as well. There's business, like there's QA, like there's all these moving parts. It's just kind of like you just said, there's no, like, there's no small parts. There's just small actors. And I just really want to push home that, like, we need to be collaborative with everyone in our spaces and on our teams in order for things to work. Because if one part's failing, like you don't pick up the slack, like that doesn't work. Like that just means the entire thing's broken.
And everyone's important. As two former office managers, be nice to your office managers.
Yeah, I get really annoyed when people are like not nice to products. Like that's a quick way to get, I can't cuss out people at work, but like an angry emoji. An angry emoji is like, be nice. What are you doing? Yeah.
Right. Well, and those are the people that they can do things. So anybody from like the product manager can make things happen to the office manager can get you things, get you the hookup with things. Always be friends with your HR folks if you really want to get hooked up with things.
Yeah,
it's crazy to me how many engineers come in with this mindset like better than thou, and you're only here because of me and I'm writing the code and you're just here to support me. It's like, no, man, if you're nice to them, you will get all the perks, all the things. Plus, true. You'll advance so much quicker in your career.
So yeah.
I always make it a point, be extra nice, because
extra nice.
They're the best people.
And where would we be without marketing?
I know. Just be kind. I think people are just like rude for no reason. It's like, it doesn't take away anything just to be kind to people, you know what I mean? So it's just like,
and you never know, your office manager that you're being really rude to could be a software engineer someday, you know? Think about that
you're trying to get a job at. Not saying that that's happening to me or anything.
Be nice to everyone.
Be nice to everybody, please.
Oh, I love this. This has been such a fun show. Like, I feel like we've really covered almost every single topic that we could, from Broadway to, you know. I do want to ask, though, you mentioned that you worked in retail, Jocelyn. We've had a lot of folks on the show before who've talked about their previous roles and experiences kind of affecting the way that they think about their current roles. In what ways have those retail kind of customer interaction roles helped you as a senior software engineer?
Just dealing with people. I think that's the biggest thing. Like, working retail is so challenging. I respect people that work retail so much, because humans are truly terrible sometimes. Very condescending, expecting a lot. And oddly enough, not saying that I've run into a bunch of people like that, but it's taught me how to maybe I've gotten worse at it since my retail days, but try to like control my emotions. I wear everything on my face, right? So I'm just like, if somebody says something off, I'm just like, retail face, like I don't even see it. And I swear, like, with retail also, like, you had to be really organized as well. You had to always be on it. You had to know your information. And I don't know if this is a coping mechanism. Maybe this is something I need to talk with my therapist about tomorrow. But when it comes to that, I kind of take that with me through jobs and meetings and everything where I want to be as prepared as possible. I kind of view, like, if I'm talking to one of my managers or if I'm talking to a product owner, I come into a meeting ready with everything outlined as much as possible. I guess this kind of comes from coding as well, because I think of edge cases. I'm like, oh, maybe they'll want this, this, and this. And it's funny because I was doing that at Coach. Like, somebody would ask for a bag, and then I'd be like, okay. And then I'd like grab like three or four accessories because maybe they'd like that too. So it's kind of like almost upselling in a way.
Yeah.
Very weird, but it works. It works for me. So.
And I love, you know, people always ask you in interviews usually like, oh, are you used to working with a variety of different types of people? You can just say, I worked in retail. Like, I've seen it all.
Literally everybody.
So many people.
Yeah, I was a Disney store employee myself. And I know usually when you're interviewing, people aren't asking you like, how did your time at Disney store, you know, help you to prepare for this job? But it's just like you said, you know, even working at some place like Sephora, thinking two steps ahead and thinking, you know, this person said that they wanted this mascara, but I'm going to bring these other ones to also show them, you know, because there's so many ways that I feel like our brains kind of like prepare us for roles later in life. And it always sneaks in interesting ways, like into my current day role.
Yeah, it's that's just it's, so true. Oh, sorry. I keep talking over you, Brandon. I feel so bad.
No, not at all. This is your show. I was just going to say that, Chloe, what you just said about people necessarily not saying something, but it's not exactly what they want, is something that took me a while to figure out as an engineer, that when somebody asks you a question, they probably aren't struggling with that question. There's something more behind it, and kind of asking like, well, what's the question behind the question? Like, why are you trying to figure out how to reverse sort of linked list? Because there probably is another way to do something. And in this case, like, maybe you don't need to do any of that. And there's a much easier way of going about it instead of kind of plowing through this one direction. So yeah, kind of going like one layer deeper, like, what do you really want? Or what are you really looking to solve? What's the problem?
Absolutely. Where can people find all your amazing stuff on the interwebs, Jocelyn? Obviously, we've got the Twitter, Java VVITCH. We got the origin of that earlier. But can people like buy your book? What's going on with the book?
Okay. So the book will be available April 30th. Pre-orders were open, but they're closed right now because it was like at 310 pre-orders and ooh, I couldn't handle that. So
what a great problem to have.
Too many people bought it.
Stop buying this book.
I wasn't ready. So yes, it will be available April 30th at midnight EST. So I'm actually going to, later on today, I'm going to actually put an email list back up because it seems as though people have been tweeting at me and messaging me about it a lot. So I probably need to have them available for that. And then the book is actually going to be a bundle. So it's going to be $25, but you'll have the white edition, you'll have the dark edition, and then you'll also get an EPUB so you can put it on your Kindle. And yeah, that's going to be at getcuteguide.dev, or you can go to getcutepodcast.com. That's also there as well. And then I have my personal website, jocelyn-harper.com, but more than likely Twitter is the best way to keep in touch with me about
anything. I'm ready for the Get Cute musical. Like, Get Cute Goes to Broadway 2035. I'm here for it.
Next on the list. You're already the star, okay?
I would like to audition for the role of Luna the cat. Like, please. Brandon, you can play yourself.
Yes. We'll work it. Say, it's fine.
I was going to say, I can play the cat. And it took me a minute to catch up. Also happy to do that. here to contribute.
And as far as, you know, the kind of folks who should be looking out for reading this book or maybe gifting this book to someone, is this a book that should be given, like, at what level should folks be at when they start reading this? Is this something maybe you should read before your boot camp or after your first role? Who should be reading this one?
I definitely think it's for people that have already received their first role. Like I said, I've kind of targeted this at mid-level to senior level people. Not to say that people that are in boot camps won't gain any information from that, but I think it would be really good for at least entry-level engineers so they can maybe sketch out a rough roadmap of where they want to go in their career. You know, people are always like, what's your 3-year plan? What's your 5-year plan? And honestly, I don't really do that because things have been kind of like all over the place. Like, I didn't think I was going to be writing a book 5 years in or doing any of this. Like, that wasn't on the plan at all. But as far as like your career is concerned, like, I know right now that I'm really good at being an individual contributor, right? I like coding. That's what I want to do right now. But who knows? Maybe like a year or two down the line, I would be open to being like a manager or something like that. And that's all information that, you know, people may not know about when they're going to their first role. So really just pick it up if you want to know, give like a general outline of what to do and what things to do to kind of like accelerate your way through the path. Because I don't necessarily believe in this timeline that senior engineers need to have 5 to 7 years experience. I had 4 when I was hired as a senior engineer, and I've known people that had 3 years experience and been hired as senior engineers. So really, it's all about what you see for yourself in your career and how hard you're going to work at it. Once you're already inside, you know, factors besides like gender and race and everything aside, because we know that's a problem.
Did you ever think 5+ years ago before your boot camp that you'd be writing a book about this? Is it kind of a strange experience?
It's really strange. I talk about this with my therapist a lot. I'm just like, people are like, oh my gosh, I'm so excited. And it's not that I'm not excited. Like, I am, but I don't think it's going to hit until it's actually available for people. And then hopefully people start buying it. And then I'll probably cry because that's usually what I do. So
I'm so excited to read it. I'm going to just devour this book when it comes out on the 30th. It is not going to sit on my shelf. I'm going to just read it. I need this info, Dawslyn. So thank you for writing it.
You're very welcome.
Yay. Well, we're pretty much at the end of the show now. But Brandon, how should we close it out? We still haven't figured out how to close out this show.
Ooh. Do we little song and dance jig? We
got. Oh, yes.
What's a song from Wicked where we don't have to buy the rights to?
Angular. We're going to learn Angular.
Why don't you have a series of TikTok videos doing that, Chloe? Honestly.
It's on the horizon. I first got to learn how to use TikTok, y'all.
It's hard.
Well, y'all, thank you so much for joining us for yet another episode of 8-Bits. We have some really, really exciting episodes coming at y'all soon, and we're going to be celebrating our anniversary soon. So wild. 1 year Woo. Of 8-Bits.
Congratulations.
Thank you so much. And Jocelyn, we'll have to have you come back after the book comes out and chat more please. About what it's like post-book release life.
I would love that.
Amazing. Thanks for coming, y'all. Bye.
See you next week.
Bye.